gun away.
Go ahead, Esther.
Oh, they took it away from me in the west door. I'm really bitter now.
Good morning. This is Commissioner Susan Wiefald. The Public Service Commission is meeting today, April 16th, 2008, at 11:30 a.m. for a special meeting. We're meeting today in the North Dakota Public Service Commission hearing room in the state capitol on the 12th floor. With me today are my fellow commissioners, Commissioner Tony Clark and Commissioner Kevin Kramer. And first I'll go to Commissioner Kramer and ask if he has any opening remarks.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, welcome.
Clark. All right. And we have nothing, it appears to me, on the consent today. And so we'll move right away into SW1. I move the commission issue a request for proposal for consulting services for siting applications, case number PU08115.
Second.
The commission has staff has spent time putting together a request for proposals for consulting services for siting applications. This is the first time in some time that the commission has done this. The purpose of the RFP is to find people who are interested in working on siting orders that the commission has before it. And we're not requiring any particular credentials for this. When we rate the applications that come in, we'll be able to look at how much experience the person has in doing this type of work, and we'll be able to look at their background, et cetera. But quite frankly, any person who's interested could submit an application to the commission to do this type of work. To give you an idea of the scope of work that we're looking at, we're requesting proposal for technical and administrative assistance in its duties. Technical assistance would include engineering and environmental assessments and oversight. Administrative assistance would include the paperwork necessary to process the project, including motions, letters, notices, attending public meetings and hearings, coordinating efforts with other state and regulatory bodies, writing findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, providing project updates, and so on. Some of the duties could include identifying exclusion and avoidance areas, inspecting to ensure the facility is constructed, operated, and maintained in compliance with the terms and conditions of the order, reviewing their applications to determine if they're complete. You get the idea. Attending public meetings. There's many different types of things that are required when you go from start to finish on a siting application, and this person or persons would be responsible for that whole process. Everything seems to be in order for the request for proposal for consulting services, and I would just like to thank the staff for checking into the issue that I had asked them to address.
I would, too. Just speaking from my own perspective, I guess, well, theoretically, anyone can always apply for a commission job. It's unlikely that we would, not to get people's hopes up, being that we were talking about workforce development, but it's unlikely that, you know, someone with no experience in the relevant field would be hired.
I might just say I appreciate this very much, and this direction is, as Commissioner Wiefald said, somewhat new for the commission, but we've been through the peaks and valleys of development in the past in this state, of course, and we're seeing an upswing in terms of generation capacity build-out, transmission build-out, the need for siting. And I like this approach, and I think that it really began the session before last when the siting laws were changed to allow us to collect the siting fee, put in a special fund, utilize it for the siting itself and the money for siting itself, and then refund the balance. And that provides a level of flexibility that allows us to do this sort of thing. It also allows us to avoid, building the bureaucracy, because government really just does not sustain those peaks and valleys in employment as well as the private sector. I think this is a good solution to the workforce needs for the commission and the energy field as we see this development continue. So I like this. I'm glad we're going this route.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Next, we'll go to the items under Commissioner Kramer's portfolio.
Okay, I have a couple of items related to the TransCanada Keystone Pipeline Project. First, KC1, I move the commission issue the notice of opportunity for hearing and a notice of informal hearing in TransCanada Keystone Pipeline LP's application to construct and operate a 218-mile 30-inch crude oil pipeline with associated facilities and pipeline interconnections in Cavalier to Sargent Counties, North Dakota, case number PU06421.
Second.
I guess it was sometime last week that we received, I guess April 7th, we received a motion to approve a number of reroutes in the Trans-Canada pipeline. To be exact, 49 reroutes were applied for. And this is reroutes in a previously cited pipeline are not necessarily all that unusual. This is a rather high number, I think, even given the 218 miles. So it does require us to do a number of things, obviously look at those reroutes with some depth and understanding and apply the order and see what the best approach is. I am of the view today, and this motion confirms that there are enough reroutes here that really we ought to take some time, first of all, provide the public the opportunity for a hearing, which this order does, or this motion does, and the public or other public officials will have until May 19th to comment and or request a formal hearing if they so desire, and they need to do that in writing and state the reasons why they would like to have a formal hearing if they would. But in addition to that, we're also, with this motion, noticing an informal hearing for May 21st. So at the very least, the commission would feel, if this motion passes, that we want to have an informal hearing with the company, have them explain a number of these reroutes, and so at the very least it would be May 21st for an informal hearing. The reasons for reroutes are numerous, obviously. In this case, there are 49 of them. But once a corridor is established and a certificate has been issued and then a route permit has been issued, it is not unusual for the construction crews and the surveying crews, once they get out on the ground in good weather, to find efficiencies, maybe find some landowner issues that they didn't know existed before, stream crossings that might be more efficiently done in various ways. That stuff, as it comes to light, oftentimes results in a request for a reroute. That's not all that unusual. Seems to be what the case is here. You might recall that we just had, time goes so fast, but in a recent siting case, the Belle Fouche siting case, which was a 32-mile, 8-inch pipeline, there were two reroutes that were applied for and received. Now, those reroutes came much later in the process. The construction was well underway when we received those. One was, 212 feet, a little change in the route, and another one was about 1,100-foot change in the route. To avoid certain infrastructure and landowner concerns. But this one's just, there are enough of them that we feel like we need to take some time with it. So,
on one of these, I just want to comment, as I was reading through, it's a 4-mile change.
Mm-hmm.
It's on beginning mile 204, ending mile around 209. It says North Dakota chairman has indicated that 5 landowners would sign if a lineman shifted east to the 1/4 section line. I just want to indicate I am not the North Dakota chairman. I don't know who the North Dakota chairman is, but whatever that refers to.
Mm-hmm. I concur with the motion. It is a little bit different than we've handled some of these in the past. Typically, we've been able to handle them just through staff and informally, but typically they've been very small and minor and limited in numbers, as Commissioner Kramer indicated. This is a little bit different in size and scope, just in sheer numbers and in the length of some of them. So I think it's probably the best way to handle it, gets it out there, available for the commission at the very least to have an informal hearing to gather information ourselves, but also gives the opportunity for other parties to petition if they feel a hearing is necessary.
I do want to make one clarifying point. Commissioner Weefald's right. There's about a 5-mile stretch there that they're moving over to east to a 1/4 section line. That they're not moving at 4 miles. It's a 4-mile stretch that they're moving quarter mile. Because none of these reroutes are outside of the existing corridor. And I think that's an important point.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC2 is related. KC2 is related to SW1 and KC1. I move the commission issue a request for proposal for consulting services in Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline siting application case number PU06421.
Second.
This is This is the RFP for a consulting service or individual who would serve as that third-party on-the-ground inspector that would be monitoring the Trans-Canada Keystone Pipeline to make sure that they're adhering to the all of the relevant issues in the order.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 That ends items in my portfolio.
And we'll go to Commissioner Clark.
TC1, I move the commission appoint Patrick J. Ward of Zuger Kermis Smith, 316 North 5th Street, Bismarck, North Dakota, 58502, as arbitrator in Midcontinent Communications Consolidated Telecom Arbitration Application, case number PU0897, subject to his availability and willingness to serve.
Second.
Under Section 252 of the Federal Act, it allows for arbitration of interconnection disputes between telecommunications carriers. This is one of those. State law provides for a process of arbitration. Both parties have found Mr. Ward to be amenable to them, so this simply appoints him as arbitrator. And the commission at the end of the proceeding has the ability to accept those arbitration provisions that have been provided. I can't remember because we haven't had one in a while if we're able to modify those or not, but in straight interconnection disputes that we have through an ALJ, we certainly are. But I think in an arbitrated hearing, it may be an up or down kind of thing. Maybe something we have to research between now and then.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All right, that concludes the items that we have on our regular meeting agenda. The commission does have administrative items that we'll be taking after we do our break, but first we'll answer any questions on the items on the special meeting agenda.
How is Mr. Ward selected?
It's a process of mutual agreement.
So they can just pick anyone as long as they both agree?
As long as it's mutually agreeable.
Okay. I was interested in the...
And the expenses are paid by the two parties in these cases.
Okay. Do we have a time yet for the May 21st hearing?
Yes, we do. It's scheduled for 1:30 here in the hearing room. Yep. It's the regular...
It's a meeting day.
Meeting day.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So is it your intent that this will be done by the end of May, perhaps? Or you're hoping to have it done by
Well, I guess I'm not in a hurry necessarily, Dave, so I don't want the answer to your question to imply that I'm in a hurry. If, in fact, no one requests a formal hearing and we go with the scheduled informal on May 21st, it depends on just how many issues there are. I wouldn't dare prejudge it at this point because there are 49, and although some of them may seem simple, we just don't know for sure yet. So I wouldn't want to prejudge the timeline.
And just so that I'm clear, does any party have the ability to request a hearing by May 19th?
Yes, they do, Dale. It's unlike an intervener situation or intervener status. This is a whole new set. It's the same issues, interestingly, as in any citing order, notice for a hearing or opportunity for a hearing. So any member of the public or public official has the right to comment and request a hearing.
Sure, one of the things that the commission would take into consideration, and you'll notice in the order, the commission has the discretion to hold one or not after hearing from parties
That's
that
right.
may intervene. I think you'd probably need to show some interest in the proceeding. I mean, either you're a landowner, you have some other interest with regard to the line. I don't know that.
Oh yeah, you don't automatically schedule
someone
a hearing.
Someone from Florida couldn't come in and say I'm right. opposed to pipelines, and so let's hold
a
hearing.
Along the lines of folk, a group of folks from Fargo.
Actually, we'll be. I told the staff we'll be notifying Fargo very specifically of this,
I'm interested in that, because I didn't realize that. I had thought that only someone who had previously intervened in this case could request the hearing, since this is a continuation of the case that we have before us. So, That was my understanding, and so therefore I'm just confused by this conversation that anyone at this point can request a hearing because we're in the same case that we have been in, and that is
I think requesting a hearing and being entitled to have one are two different things.
Okay, Bill to the rescue.
It's published, and so you may get request for hearing from who knows who may request it, you that's why I think the law provides that the commission has discretion. I mean, there has to be a good reason for a hearing,
right?
And so you look at those things at the point a request is made.
But just so that we're clear, you don't have to have been involved in this case or be an intervener in this court hearing.
I'm not even going to get into that question.
Anybody can request anything at any time, but we have the discretion to determine whether it needs to be settled, whether the issue can be settled with or without a hearing.
The RFP for siting application, is it a person or persons?
Excuse me, go on. I'm still thinking about the last question.
Your first agenda item for the RFP.
Yes.
How many people are we talking about?
It could be a group of people who choose to apply to do the work. It could be an individual.
Okay. And these are siting applications for anything in particular?
Well, I suppose they could be for wind siting projects, transmission siting projects. They could be for power plant siting projects.
It's really at the discretion of the commission as we move forward. As we manage these cases, some that we know we have and some that are potentially coming, we want to make sure that we have flexibility from a staffing standpoint to be able to handle them, and by having this RFP out there and consultants on retainer, I guess, it gives us that flexibility to be able to manage our own staffing needs while processing these cases in a timely manner.
Obviously, the breadth and depth of experience and expertise in any given applicant will be a factor in determining, you know, which applicant would best serve those responsibilities, those opportunities.
But I'm just trying to. Mm-hmm. This isn't for a particular project. This is.
It is not.
Any siting of any project that would you cite.
That's exactly right, Dale, and that's why we.
Case basis of which ones our staff can handle and which ones then we would put out.
But that is why there are two motions, similar motions on the agenda today, as a matter of fact, because originally we decided that the Keystone inspector, if you would, could be part of that first, that first RFP. But the fact is we decided to take that one out and do it specifically.
I'm just trying to figure out how one would respond to an RFP if they didn't know what the work was going to be. Well, I mean, they know what the work is going to be, but the work encompasses such a broad range of things that it would be. I'm just trying to figure out how someone would give you an RFP.
Well, we'll give you a copy of it. I think it's quite specific as far as the responsibilities, and so if you're able to do one, you'd probably be able to do another.
Right. And the siting law itself is not, you know, specific to necessarily just pipelines or just transmission lines or just generation facilities. I mean, it's a broad law that really, regardless of what type of facility is going in, you're looking at the same sorts of factors, and the commission has the same type of procedures.
And Dale,
facts might be different, but the procedures are substantially similar.
And what I would say, Dale, is that just as we see similar faces and names come before us for a wide range of siting cases, whether they be lawyers, law firms, engineers, or engineering firms, I would suspect that the same might be true when we put out an RFP to the applicants that respond.
And could you just explain, I mean, we know the answer to this, but could you explain why you're doing this, why this is necessary?
We're doing this because we have a very small staff of public utility experts, and we have a large workload before the commission of potential siting projects. And so we're seeking assistance with those projects to complement the work of our staff.
The energy industry in general is perhaps much more cyclical than a lot of other industries that are out there. And what you see is building booms and then periods where, they're either bust or there just isn't much investment. And so, you know, in the 70s, there was a tremendous amount of investment in the energy infrastructure in this country, and you saw a huge amount of workload come through the commission, pipelines, generation facilities, transmission lines. And then for a period of about 20 years or so, there really was not that much investment in the energy industry generally. Assets were depreciated off the books. There had been enough capacity built into the system. There was an overcapacity for a while. And just like it's been historically, now those markets have tightened up. It's drawing capital, new capital, into the energy industry, and so the commission is on the receiving end of seeing all those dollars that are flowing into North Dakota, and we see it by virtue of the just many, many cases that we have before us. As Commissioner Kramer, I think, hit it right on the nail right on the head. It's tough from a government standpoint to deal with that because you can't build a staff for, it's like they say, you can't build a church for the Easter Sunday crowd. You can't build a staff for those periods when you have just a tremendous amount of workload. So the way that we've are able to manage it is through these consulting contracts. The contractors that we would hire on would be qualified and would work very closely with staff. And, of course, the commission itself always has ultimate control over the projects. But it's a way to manage the workload and to be flexible. And I am just thankful that the legislature a few years ago did see the wisdom of going forward and changing our siting laws so that we have access to these dollars to be able to manage it as we have been. Before, the money just went to the general fund and was never to be seen again.
Just so that we're clear, the siting dollars you referred to, what are they?
Those are the fees that the companies pay when they apply.
In statute, there's a formula that when a company makes an application, they have to pay a certain amount. In previous years, that amount just went into the general fund. It was just kind of a windfall, basically. It's very tough to budget on. A few years ago, the legislature made the change that allowed those monies to go into a special fund that the commission could use to process the application itself, and then return the money that wasn't used.
So, how much money is in that special fund right now?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know what the amount is, but there is the way the formula works, it's capped at $100,000 per project. So, the vast majority of large projects, of course, of which it seems to be the vast majority of projects, ends up being $100,000. It's not unusual for us to spend less than $2,000 of that $100,000 and then, as Commissioner Riefold said, to refund the rest. It is a better way to manage the state budget. It's a better way to manage our budget. And I might just add that none of this would be possible if we didn't have the experience level and the depth of understanding of these issues within our own staff. The only way that we could utilize an RFP like this or utilize consulting firms is to have the oversight of our public utility staff that experienced those 70s, interestingly. So that experience is coming around to be very, very helpful. Some of them are here. I think it's interesting to note that the Public Service Commission staff 20 years ago had 20 more people than it has today. And so it's that cycle that we're trying to smooth out here, while at the same time building up the expertise within the private sector. So I think it's a win-win all the way around.
Anything else?
Are there just this person who's going to be a person or a firm who's going to be hired, are there particular projects you have now that you want them to work on, or is it future projects that you expect?
Forward-looking.
Okay. So the projects that you have now, they're all kind of accounted
well,
for?
Well, we have staff already working on those, and we have timelines, for those. And so, for example, the transmission line that is being sited in eastern North Dakota, 60 miles, and then the wind farm. We have two wind farms that we're in the process of, we've received applications, and we're in the process of setting.
Well, there could be some that we have letters of intent on that might, at some point,
Yes.
Be worked on by the consultants.
And we have 10-year plans. It's not that we don't have a pretty good sense of what the future holds in terms of energy development. We just want to be adequately prepared for that.
Okay. Do you broadcast your ad in?
Yes, we do.
Yes, we do.
Do you want to turn your mic on then?
I have my mic on now.
I don't think so.
It's on.
It's on. It says blue.
Here, you can hear.
Yeah. Thank you. And so what we'll do is now we'll adjourn for admin.